Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Mascani. And on the panel this evening, we have Ernest McBride Jr., Brother Kwabena, Big Brother Kwabena. We got Brother Ahi, Brother Mashinda, and we have Miss Natasha Kelly. Welcome, Miss Natasha Kelly. I'm glad you came. It breaks the monotony because we usually had the same five here all the time, but now we have another person, and then Kwabena is visiting, which is great. Professor Rye will not be with us this evening. He's getting some rest, well-deserved rest. So the guest this evening is one of my buddies, Brother Straw. Brother Straw is a comedian. He's the younger brother of Kwabena. He's a part of the famous Pratt family. He's Patrick William Pratt or William Patrick Pratt. And we've had the family on before, and I just enjoy when the Pratt family come around. Everybody may know their uncle, pretty popular guy back in the day, Geronimo Pratt. And Kwabena, what's his other name, Kwabena? Geronimo Pratt?
Jijaga.
Jijaga, yeah.
Okay, so I've been knowing Brother Pratt for years now. I can't even tell you how many years. I know it's probably a good 30 years or something like that. And he's a very talented young man, very talented. And it runs in the family because I know you guys heard Kwabena's commentary a lot. And then they have a actress niece, Kyla Pratt. My daughter's name is Kyla, too. Matter of fact, we went to a party over Straw's apartment one time, and it was a Kyla's party, and I brought my daughter, Kyla, to the party. So we had two Kylas there, and that was years ago. But I always enjoy my brother. We're going to interview him this evening, so I'm going to give him a few questions, and then I'm going to go to the panel. So I'm going to break it up. I'm not going to give you all the questions at once. But Brother Pratt, welcome to the show this evening. I'm glad you can make it. And I want you to tell us something you want us to know about you before I start asking you questions.
Oh, man, you didn't even tell me that you was going to ask me to tell y'all something about me that I wanted y'all to know.
Well, that's okay. So tell us something. Tell us one thing before I start asking you questions.
Let's see. I never officiated volleyball till last year. It's mostly basketball. So when I started doing volleyball, I didn't know that you could kick the ball in volleyball. How about that? You learn something new every year.
I didn't know you could kick the ball in volleyball either, so I just learned something new. Matter of fact, I don't think I ever seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because it's such a rarity, and, you know, it's so low percentage, but it did keep a couple of balls alive, and I had to swallow my whistle a few times.
Wow, yeah. That's something. You learn something every day, don't you?
You learn something day every new.
Day every new. Okay, that's cool. So tell me this, man. Where's your parents from?
My parents, my dad, Charles Pratt Sr., is from Morgan City, Louisiana. And my mom, Miranda Montgomery, is from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. North Tuscaloosa / Northport, with the Black Warrior River separating the two cities.
Morgan City, Louisiana.
Yeah, so every time LSU and Alabama play, it's mama versus daddy.
Wow. Interesting. What major city is Morgan City next to in Louisiana?
Oh, it's 100 miles southwest of New Orleans.
And that's the closest major city?
Yeah. I mean, Lafayette is a sub city. It's a city, but it ain't major. But my brother, Baton Rouge is just a little bit further the other way, a little bit. But yeah, Baton Rouge is within striking distance as well. McNeese State is in Lake Charles. That's going back toward Texas.
I didn't know Lake Charles, Louisiana. I didn't know McNeese State was in Lake Charles.
Yeah.
Man, that's something.
Yep, Northeast Louisiana is what
Lake Charles had a college.
Northeast, is it Natchitoches or is that Northwest? I think that's Northeast. Grambling's in Grambling and Southern's in Baton Rouge. So, yeah, they got a lot of colleges out there. You know, it's interesting to dad being from. Go ahead.
Where are you from?
Well, I was just about to start talking about that. I'm from Carson because mom and dad met, even though they're from those down south states, they met at UCLA, got married, had six kids, then got a divorce. But before that happened, everybody was born on Murph Street. I was the only one born on Northwood in Carson.
Murph Street, where?
Correct me, Paul. Correct me, big brother.
I think Carrie and Kesey may have been born in Compton, but me, Monty, and Mila were born in Venice.
That's right, in Venice. Yeah. Even before we got to Compton.
So you guys got some Compton blood in you, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all good. That's my hometown.
And you know what I like to bring up? Before they opened up the street from Central Avenue, we used to have to go either through Avalon or through Wilmington to get to Compton. So we used to do that back in the day. And dad used to
I remember that.
Dad would get back on Central and go to the plaza right there. I think it was on either Alondra or Compton. I think it was Compton Boulevard. And the one on Rosecrans and Central. And we used to go to this market that sold these hot link sandwiches. You had to walk all the way. Once you go inside, you had to walk a lot of feet to the back. And that's where the deli was. And they give you that wax paper. That piece of white deli bread and put that piece of hot link on there with that red juice and nothing else. That's it. And that was all.
Man, look, them hot links melted in your mouth. I stopped eating pork for years, but when I went there one time, I ain't gonna lie, I got one and it melted in my mouth. It was horrible, but I think it was called Stops or something. My brother told me about it. Stops. Because, yeah, when we were coming up, Pops only would let us get a little piece of it. But yeah, that was the hot link ever.
I remember those hot links, man. Mm-hmm. I remember that. So, how many siblings do you have? And describe them.
Mom and dad had six kids, three boys, then two girls, then me. So it's Monty, Milo, and Paul, and Esquabana there, then Kesey, Carrie, then myself. And later on, 10 years later, you know, after we moved back down to Louisiana and got tired of the rat race after being out here 20 years or so, moved back to Louisiana to retire. He started another family and had four more kids. And so I got 10 siblings because one stepsister, as you would call. So it's 11 of us, 10 biological. And the oldest brother, Monty, you know, he's the only one of the first unit of the boys that didn't really get into sports. He watched it a little bit, but he was more into, you know, the meditation and anything that was spiritual. So he liked the kung fu. He still was a funny dude. So he'd get out there and shoot with us sometime, huh, Paul?
Yeah, once in a while we get money to come even off the team. He played for a
bit. Then the second oldest is Milo, Charles Jr., and Milo is quite the character himself. That's a whole nother book, a movie. We would call him like the lovable bandit, you would say, because even though he was good in sports, he was a ladies' man as well. He had the gift of gab. And he was real smart, but he used it to get into a lot of mischief. He was crazy, but everybody loved Milo. Rest in peace.
That's a good way to put it.
Rest in peace to big brother Milo. And then there's Quabinar right here who influenced me a lot because he and Milo were playing at Victoria Park. His dad was coaching because, you know, when mom and dad split, mom moved to the Bay Area and took me, Kesey, and Carrie. And Dad stayed down in Carson with the three older brothers. So every summer we would come and get dropped off and come down and spend 3 months in L.A. and then have to go back to the Bay Area. And then we come down for the Christmas break, too, for about a week or two. So those were the only times we'd be coming down here. And, you know, when I was down for the summer, I saw the Victoria Park basketball thing and I saw Paul play and Melo play. I see Dad on the Victoria Park All-Stars as a coach and see Melo hold one of the trophies. He's one of the few players. I was happy to get a hold of that picture recently at Richard Gwynn's repass. Rest in peace to the brother Richard Gwynn, who's from Carson, probably the greatest athlete. Probably the greatest athlete to come out of cars, played many sports. So
yeah, I heard he was a super athlete, and I met him also through Tony, because Tony's cousin and him was an item at one time.
Right. Yeah, they grew up on the block. So yeah, then there's Kesey and Carrie. Kesey was always vivacious and flamboyant, as far as, you know, from a female perspective. She really influenced me a lot with the arts. I might have wanted to watch cartoons on the weekend and she like, no, we watching a Danny Kaye movie. We watching, what's her name? Shirley Temple and stuff like that. So that type of stuff helped me have a good perspective on a broad perspective instead of just all funk and stuff. But, you know, Quabenile, like I said, he influenced me a lot with the music and the sports because I'm watching him and Melo play. And, you know, we had that basket in the backyard. And even with the lights off, this fool is out there shooting late at night. So, you know, I saw that kind of dedication. And, you know, one time I was down for the summer and I played all of my cousins and they was around my age and they friends and they all beat me. And then so the next year I went back up to the Bay Area and mom's husband never shoot hoop with me, but I didn't care. But I worked on my game on my own and I came back the next summer and beat all three of them. So I was like, I got to catch up to my older brothers. And then there's Carrie. Carrie went to UCLA. It's my second older sister. Went to Banning. She was cheerleader at Banning. She was in the band in school at Curtis and at Banning. Went to Upward Bound. I first heard of Upward Bound because she went to Upward Bound at UCLA through the banding program and Mr. Woodson teaching the band and music stuff at Banning High School. For those who went to Banning, I know they know Mr. Woodson. So, you know, she's left her legacy as well, graduating from UCLA. The only one of us that did that. Dad went to UCLA and graduated. The rest of us either got degrees from different colleges or even the oldest two got their degrees from junior colleges. Mining the smartest one only went as far as junior college, so didn't really need college to validate it, you know, who's the most intelligent or studious or whatever. But that's the first six in a nutshell. We can get into the next four later on. Beautiful sisters from Louisiana, Kendoisa, Tanta, Damini, and my little brother Zamon, you know, so love them all, but I don't want to take up all the time talking about them. We got to get through questions. We'll get to y'all next time I get on here.
Gonna leave the youngsters out. Okay.
For now. I'll be back on here again. I'm gonna get y'all in part two. You might even come back up even during this one too.
Well, what I'm gonna do is I don't want to keep asking all the questions. I want to get to the panel because, you know, we've been on for a minute now and we only got a few questions in, but I want to go to the panel and I'm going to go to Quabin, our last on the panel, because he know most about you. Mm-hmm. So, Ernest, any questions or comment for Brother Pratt right now?
No, just like he was bringing back a lot of familiarity with me because I'm like maybe 30 years before you,
in the same area, you know, about the hot links and all that on Central and El Segundo and Rosecrans, because I had one of my first girlfriends lived in Watts on 111th and Monitor, you know, and that was right off Wilmington. You know, Monitor's like a block west of Wilmington.
Okay, okay.
And Johnny Oldis had a record shop. Hunter Hancock had a record shop up there on Wilmington. And, you know, people used to hang up there a lot. So,
one of the boys at a record shop.
Yeah.
So, what about the house of Maisha, Paul?
Old memories there, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Who about the house of Maisha, Paul?
Yeah, the house of Maisha was on
Central.
Central and 130.
Your camera 120? Off. Your camera off.
Okay, Central and 120.
No, that was way after me too, because we kind of hung out at the 5-4 ballroom on 54th and Broadway, and then they used to give a lot of concerts in South Park, and that's why I used to hear a lot of the old groups like Clyde McFadden, the Dominoes, and the Drifters, and the Clovers, and Five Keys. So that's kind of my forte back there, you know.
Nice, nice.
Strong, you wouldn't know nothing about that. Yeah,
man. I heard of a couple of them. I was about to say the Blue Notes, LA, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes and stuff.
Yeah, Harold Melvin.
The Chi Lights.
Chi Lights, yeah.
The Controllers.
Yeah, hell yeah.
The Mac.
And then I kind of go over to Nina Simone's, my favorite too. So I had to throw her in there. And then Bob Marley, I kind of got off in the like the little reggae also. So
there are many stories, too many, both old and new. What is true?
That's Ziggy and the Melody Makers.
Yeah,
that's Ziggy.
I knew you was going to know Ross Gunn.
look, if I can ask South Park. Now, South Park, I went and saw a couple of Black Panther rallies. Pops took us to a Black Panther rally at South Park. I remember that's the only time I remember.
I kind of remember that because I remember they had Rap Brown came there, they had a big rally with him at Jordan High School. And then, I think Dr. Ra even remember that, you know. So,
and you know, Dad used to be heavily involved, and Corbin, I can tell you more about it on the Watts Summer Festival in Black at Exposition Park and stuff.
Yeah, I used to go to that every year, like in mid 50s, you know. Yeah,
yeah, before my time.
Yeah, you probably wasn't born.
Yeah, that's my parents. You know, Ernest, you up there with my parents and them. So
yeah.
I'm gonna go to Brother Ahi. Brother Ahi, any questions or comments so far?
This is one of those times I think I'm gonna learn something. Be quiet. All right.
Feel free to chime in anytime you have some questions, my brother.
Lashenda? Wonder what happened to Natasha. She's not here no more.
You know, someone just posted that South Park is named in honor of Barry White.
I saw that.
Okay, Machinda is just, I guess he's listening. So let's go to OWLK7's iPhone. Question or comment? And who are you? If you don't mind telling us. Okay, no mic. No mic. All right, Kwabena. What you want to say about your brother so far? Or you have any questions for him?
Yeah, one of the things that I
Pat's friend. Right.
Okay.
Oh, hey, Rahima. Yeah, Rahima is from LA. She grew up out here. She's around the same age as Paul. We did the same class. Well, I've been knowing her a long time. conscious, beautiful sister.
Excellent. Glad
That's
she can make
my
it.
dog, dear. That's my goddess, dear.
Excellent. Go ahead. Go ahead, Kwabena.
So yeah,
anything so far?
Just a couple things. My little brother. Just a good brother and always keeps you laughing and smiling. And I love that about him. I looked at that collage behind him. There's a collage. And I did a collage. He talked about us living with my father keeping the three oldest young men, me, Monty, and Milo. After him and my mom split, and they moved to the Bay Area. And stepbrother Philip was there with us also. And so we shared a room, and my brother Monty and Milo, they shared another room, and my stepmom, Majati, peace and blessings to her, just made transition recently. But when they split, I had the room by myself for quite a while, and I just went wild on the wall with a serious collage. And so yeah, he followed that one, and his whole thing about basketball. If he had any questions about basketball, you know, I thought I was a basketball historian, but this brother, like, man, I come to him and he just extended it on to football and just about every sport. Just amazing what he keeps in his head about these sports and this trivia. And just to always have some good things to say. And also he used to teach a teacher, you know, also teach the youth in different areas in Compton and parts of LA. And one of the things he told me, because, you know, we struggled with this Clear the Airways project, and I always got to get insight from him and others that I'm tight with. And he shared this thing about this N-word. He asked the question, what was that question about when our people meet their demise?
Oh, what's the last thing they hear before somebody shoots them or does some commit some harm on them? What's the last word they hear?
Yes. His examples, or what were the choices, brother?
I don't remember. I know it was something positive or something negative.
Yeah, the
my prince,
are they
my brother,
name?
My
are
brother,
they brother.
Are they called the N-word?
Or they call? Or does the N-bomb dropped on them? And I asked that question a lot in the survey, and just about everybody says the N-bomb is dropped on them. So yeah, just getting insight from that, insight working in the inner city and the school districts and LAs that we share. But also one thing that you can ask him, part of his comedy routine or how he goes is 500 voices. So he can mimic 500 voices. My favorites are when he does Cheech and Chong.
Hey man, Emma. Hey, why you asking me to put me on? Emma, you talking about us, man? Unless you gotta light it up. Yeah, we can't do this. Why can't we, man? Cause man, some kids watching. Oh, hold on, leg.
Yeah, I love what he does, Cheech and Chong.
Excellent, excellent. What's the young lady name again? That shit, Rima.
Rahima.
Rahima, do you have a question or comment, or are you just listening? Okay. Well, let's go back to the questions. Let me see.
But like, I did have a follow up though about because we both officiate basketball, and brother Russell County, you hoop. As a matter of fact, today I went to the gym up here in Gary. And I try to just give me 100 shots, 100 makes, not 100 shots. I wish I could make them in just a little over 100, but it takes quite more than that. And I was shooting around with this 9-year-old. His grandmother was there. And, we was messing around. And then some other cats came in, some other young cats, and then they want to play. They want to play 21. So, no, let's do a 2-on-2. Me and a 9-year-old against two. And we whipped them up. Pretty good, but it was pretty cool. But, and when I came in, some brothers, some older brothers, know me from refereeing basketball too. And one of the things I was going to share with them that I shared earlier, because I saw Bronny got a breakaway and had a nice slam the other day, but he took 4 steps. And I was like, you know, it's a trip how they get away with that in the NBA. And as a high school basketball ref, I call it. And I'm like, you know, sometimes I look at you crazy, but I'm like, look, or the carrying and the steps, I call it. But the only thing I tell them to kind of shut them up is that this ain't the NBA. Because they all know the NBA be getting away with that. But what's your thoughts, Strout, on the state of hooping and basketball? Because there's a lot of the people, regulars on the show, are big-time hoopers. I saw that when I watched the episode with Craig Hodges recently, and I knew it before then, too. But your comments on the state of especially youth basketball, AAU, or that level.
Well, definitely the youth is affected by what they see in the NBA. And now with the NIL thing, everybody's looking for money. And, you know, I'm always been in favor of college and amateurs getting paid, but it has to be some sort of structure to it. Because now with this NIL money, they can become a millionaire without even going to the league. So then they take their drive away, already getting paid to play. F the NBA, F the pros. So it's taking the hunger away. I do agree they should get paid, but then somebody like, how you gonna, I'm like, let them get it in the trust and get it later. Who are you to tell when they should get their money? You right. So I mean, I gotta find some middle ground somewhere. But as far as the quality of play, these guys aren't going to the parks anymore. We passed by the parks we grew up in. We used to be out there all day, every day. These cats is barely out of the park. They're not playing against older guys, playing against winos, crackheads, alcoholics, gangsters. You know, fight to get on the court, fight to get off the court. No coaches, no parents, no clock, none of that stuff. They're not facing that kind of adversity, so it just takes the heart away. You can see. You know, they argue that they might be more skilled and all this stuff, but they're not applying the skills to make themselves complete basketball players. And everybody wants it to happen overnight, but don't want to put the work in. I know some of this stuff sounds cliche, but you know, I see it all the time when I'm refereeing a lot of bad basketball. You know, when I'm refereeing, I see a black team come out, a predominantly black, right before I'm about to toss it up. I'll tell them. Well, the other team come out and say, don't think you're going to win just because you're black. And then they get out there, a lot of them think they're going to win just because they black. And I don't give them no love. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You know, if they balling, yeah, but if they ain't, like, nah, you ain't getting that because you black and I'm black. You getting balled up. You should be like, I ain't letting, you know, these cats take me. Whatever other race it is, we used to have pride. Like, we ain't letting these white boys, Mexicans, or Asians, whatever, even though it might not have been politically correct, that was our attitude. We wasn't going to let them beat us like that. Oh, but hey, if they balling, they balling. So step your game up, but they ain't doing that. They taking it all personal, looking for love from the ref. Like, nah, you got a ball. You show some heart and go strong, you get it. You going up weak, looking for the call, crying, So that's how I ref the game.
Well, you're supposed to be straight up. You don't supposed to give no leeway to one team or another.
Yeah, but some right. Nah, of course not. But, you know, sometimes as ex-players, we might take it personal or for the style of play. Ah, that man was open. He kept it hot dogged. He got hit. He don't deserve it, but he got fouled. You got to call it, but you don't want to give him reward for messing up. So sometimes I don't give it to him unless he got hit hard. He got slightly hit, but he got hit hard. I got to give it to you. Lucky you got hit hard. Otherwise, he should have passed.
You talking about M ones?
Or whatever type of situation.
Oh, man, a foul is a foul,
even the shooting. A foul ain't a foul. Depends on the situation. Cats like to say that, but a foul ain't always a foul. Depends on the situation.
Well, I mean, within, you know, the confines of what's happening, a foul is a foul. But, you know, you got to use your judgment.
Man, don't you? The flow of the game and everything.
Yeah. Let's get into your primary school and high school experiences. How was it? What type of student you were? Class clown, since you're a comedian, you know, did you hone some skills from back then or what? What about your school experience? How was it?
Okay, so like I say, we going back and forth from the Bay Area to Southern California. I did kindergarten out here at Broadacres, and then after that we moved up to LA, then end up to the Bay Area. So I'm in Richmond going to Woodrow Wilson Elementary, and first grade Miss Wiley, second grade Miss Carnett, third grade Mr. Corby, fourth grade Miss McIntyre, who was Carrie's fourth grade teacher as well. Then mom pulled us out of public school and put us in in private school, put us in Catholic school. That was the thing she started getting on. But I remember at Woodrow Wilson, we were in a play, an assembly at night. Invite your parents to come watch. It was Martin Luther King, and everybody had like four lines. So you can write it on a piece of paper and read it, or you can memorize it. Yeah. So I said, yeah, it's going to be lame to read it on a piece of paper. So I memorized it. So when my part came, I stepped up and said my lines and got a little ovation. And so like, oh, they like that. Okay. So that was kind of my first introduction to performing in front of a live audience and, you know, seeing the response. And wasn't really thinking about stand up yet, but got exposed to a little bit of Richard Pryor, you know, watching the Little Rascals and Three Stooges and comedies, Good Times and Sanford and Son, watching those things. School came easy to me. I was gifted, as they say. To me, it was just me being me. I remember the SRA kits where we had to answer questions, and then the answers was on the card on the back, upside down. But, you know, I cheated and ended up finishing faster than everyone on that one, and cheated and won some prizes, but I didn't feel guilty because I still learned. I found out when you cheat, you can still learn. Because making the cheat notes, even if you can't pull them out, just writing them down was repetition, so you memorized.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I remember one time in eighth grade, I sat in the first row, and I may put some cheating notes right down in front of my desk with no desk in front of me. And the teacher's desk is right over there. She seen me and she already knew I was smart. That's why she had me in the front. So she was over there like, what's this boy doing? So I turned my test in and sat back down. She said, come here. I was sitting around like, oh, Lord. She said, what's that answer? I got it right. What's that answer? I got it right. What's that answer? I got it right. All right in front of her. She said, sit down. I just started laughing like, she already knows. So sometimes you just have to entertain yourself. But dad influenced us a lot. He got into a lot of different schools of thought and walks of life. And he rebelled against the system. But some of the stuff, I wish he'd have been a little bit more thorough. I still value what he said. He's way more positive than negative. But when he said the education system was a crockish, then that turned me off from making honor rolls and stuff. I just did just enough to get by. That was after the sixth grade when I left. But after a couple of years of that, I realized that we are, even though that's true, we're judged based on the performance we do while we're being exposed to this BS. So get through it, do the best you can, get the best marks so you'll be regarded as smart. It ain't hard. So I picked myself back up toward the last couple of years before I graduated and brought the average back up. But, you know, and when you're mature, you start thinking for yourself. The best thing he did was introduce this whole diet thing to us. He pulled us off of red meat and sugar when I was 9. And all my brothers and sisters, most of them didn't adhere to it. They didn't want to do it. My oldest brother was the only mind. Me and him was the only one that did it. The rest of them was sneaking candy. This fool right there, Quabino, working in the candy store. I said, Dad, why are you letting him work in the candy store at Curtis? And we supposed to be off sugars. Well, I don't want to force it on him. Yeah, but he working in the candy store.
Yeah. That's why I wasn't in that candy store. Man, look. And I was like, it's crazy. I was telling one of my comrades, Brother Reggie Reese. Was it Reggie or Reggie Turner? It was Reggie Turner or Reggie Thomas, one of them. I used to be slamming that candy too. And I would go to class, the French class, and be like, I don't know if I was selling the candy or giving it away, selling the candy. And I was like you asked about you, I was a clown in my ninth grade French class at Curtis. And the teacher finally got fed up with it and sent me to the office. And one of the things she was, her complaint, he's always coming here with a bunch of candy. Candy? Where you getting that candy from?
And that's how you got busted.
That's how I got busted. They took me out the student store, but they put me in leadership. So leadership was like where all the smart people were, because I was knocking them grades out and all that too, was where all the smart people were in the leadership. I said, how do I get busted? Even though I never admitted to I was stealing the candy. I'm a child of all I can, but I never admitted to that. But I was in leadership. But look, real quick story to go along with this. So as soon as I got in leadership, it was near the end of the year. It was right before Easter, and leadership decided they were going to give Easter eggs on Holy Thursday because Good Friday we got off. Give Easter eggs to all the students, and I told them, I said, I don't think y'all should do that. Of course, they wouldn't listen to me. I just got there, so. And that last period, they gave out the Easter eggs. Everybody, I don't want no Easter. Why are they giving us this? So give them to me. I'll take them. So I had about 7, 8 Easter eggs they give me. As soon as that bell rang, guess what happened? Giving junior high school students Easter eggs. Guess what happened as soon as we got in the hallway? Anybody want to guess?
I know what happened.
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
They was having an egg fight. They was having a great time in that hallway.
Hard-boiled Easter eggs. Man, that was so crazy. I remember, never forget, Robert Wilson, I'll let you go back to it, Brother Straw, but Robert Wilson lived right by the school, so he wanted to run home. On Monday, you could have never known, man. They cleaned that school up so well. I feel sorry for them custodians, though, who tore that school up.
So Ross County from from first grade to fourth grade, I'm in the Bay Area. We coming down every summer and every Christmas. Mom's parents lived around the street on Grandy. And so after the fourth grade, mom's is divorcing her second husband and moving back to LA. So I'm like, all right, good. It was cool up there. I recorded some nice memories. I've been back a few times. I want to go back again to the Bay Area and Richmond and stuff and walk my path to elementary school and cry. I want to go do that. But while I was up there, I knew I was an LA native and I was a Laker fan. So when the Lakers played the Warriors in the playoffs, I felt privileged to be able to watch the Laker home games because I was in Northern California. But the games, they were in Golden State. You know, they were blacked out because they weren't sold out. So they was blacked out. So I couldn't see those. But, you know, I just first started getting into basketball my last year in the Bay Area. So we come down here and I'm like, good. Now we're here in Culver City and Carson. That's way closer to being in the Bay Area. And then Dad says, we about to move to Louisiana. I'm like, what? We just got here about to leave. Why? He said, because I'm tired of the rat race. And I'm going to save your brother's life because Milo, hate to admit it, but was messing with angel dust and he wanted to save his life. So it didn't happen right away. Went through the summer. I didn't bring it up back and forth. School started. I'm going to school at St. Augustine in Culver City right by MGM Graham Studios. We live in Tara Hill. Apartment complexes, they condominium complexes now, right next to Lakeside and Raintree, living right there. And we come over, spend Christmas. All right, I guess they ain't going to Louisiana. I ain't heard nothing. Then watch the Super Bowl over there, Denver and Dallas. Then the next weekend was All-Star weekend. Mom dropped me off and just left. She didn't go in the house. As soon as she dropped me off, I look and like things looked different. Like, so what's going on? Say, remember the move to Louisiana I talked about? Yeah, we about to do it now. I'm like, what? So yeah, I even got you a jacket. You want to go? Like, I only brought a weekend's worth of clothes. Well, I'll buy you some more clothes when we get there. So I said, all right. So I hopped in the car, the truck, and traded in the Grand Prix for a four-door GMC, two-tank truck, and drove that sucker to the Bay Area first on a Friday night. Slept over, visited Geronimo, then came back down to the 10. We're going through Yosemite. I thought we was going to die going over cliffs and stuff, 3,000 feet, that highway right there on the side of the mountain. One false move, I'm looking over there like, oh, shit. I didn't think we was going to make it. Made it back down to the 10, and I don't know to this day how we got from L.A. to the Bay Area, back down to the 10 East, and made it to Morgan City that Sunday morning for the All-Star game, and Aunt Jocelyn made us go to church and miss the first half. I don't know how we did that in 2.5 days, in 2 days.
We did it though. Look, I was even driving for a second on that trip.
Yeah, oh, that was something. He had a two-bed truck. I mean, a two tank truck with a bed. So anytime we start running out of gas and the car is trembling, oh, I got to run out of gas. Then reach down and switch the tank, switch that switch. And then you can see the needle go from E back up to F. Like, oh, okay, we got to fool another tank. And somebody got sleepy, we didn't have to pull over. They just lean forward, another one slide under, and they take over. We got four boys here that can drive, four young men, three young men and the pops. So we didn't stop for nothing but gas. Barely did that with two tanks. We made it to Morgan City in the middle of the school year, middle of my fifth grade year.
We down in Louisiana. 17, 16, and 15 helping to drive. I drove the least, of course, but we were helping to drive on that trip. That was crazy. Pops was but it still is brilliant. I mean, brilliant man. Growing up with him, he would have us driving through LA. We'd have to read on the way back to Carson from LA. He'd have us reading, always into metaphysics, dealing with what was it, biorhythms, dealing with numerology, all these things, and just was really, really
and meditation.
Really, and meditation, yeah. Him and
remember he meditating in that walk-in closet upstairs, and anytime we make noise downstairs, he bang his foot, and then we looking up like, making too much noise, Dad up there meditating.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And grew up, he was like, you know, definitely a supporter of Geronimo. You know, it's a trip that, because all of the comrades, all my uncle's comrades would be at the house all the time. And also in our neighborhood, not only was my father, who was Geronimo's oldest brother, Bunchy Carter's oldest brother, also lived in Del Amo, Kim Morris and Kim Morris and Carrie Morris's father was Bunchy's oldest brother. And they would be out there, and Kim used to tell me that she remembered when Uncle G and Bunchy would be at her house back then out in Carson.
Yeah, and I remember living, when I was living up there from first grade to fourth grade, Dad would come up and going to visit Geronimo in San Quentin. He'd pick us up and take us to go visit him. And my last year up there, we discovered we had some cousins that had been living there the whole time. Carl Petty, and he had two daughters, my cousins Kim and Carla, aka Butter. And I met them, and then we moved to LA, like I said, and when we went back up there on our way to Louisiana, we stayed with them. And I just met them, but they didn't know me, Lomani, and Paul, so they got to know them. It was that one night we spent the night. I mean, they still talk about y'all, Paul.
Oh, good. Oh, good. You're still in touch with them. Tell us a little bit about your niece, man, and you know, Kyla, and you know what. And how we're so proud of her and what she's been doing and continues to do to, you know, to represent, you know, young Black sisters and represent, you know.
Well, before even thinking that she would become an actress or whatever, she was already smart. And just like I do with any of my nieces and nephews or any kids that I'm around, I'm gonna drill them and clown with them. Make them laugh, make sure they're sharp, make sure they're taken care of, and all of that, putting smiles on their faces and stuff. But, you know, making sure that they're sharp and smart and singing songs with them. You know, and the songs that I sung with her and her siblings since they was little, they would still click to this day, like Common's Orange Pineapple Juice, when he took the little chant from Beat Street, I didn't even think about it. It was from B Street till I looked back at it. So that's where he got it from. E-da-da, da-do-do. E-da-da. E-da-da. E-da-da, da-do-do. If I fall into that, the three of them is going to start smiling and start saying it with me. So things like that. And you know, when she turned 22, I gave her a copy of herself and all the little stuff that I did with her. And one of them, I was drilling her real hard on her speech and talking and stuff and correcting her. It looked like it might have been getting on her nerves, but she stuck with it. And she was laughing through the whole thing as well. And people was looking at that like, oh, wow, you helped like shape her up. Like, yeah, I would do that with everybody. She just took it to another level herself. But, you know, it was cool. So to see her turn her into what she turned into. Not surprised. And of course, we're proud of her that she has always maintained her dignity and self-respect throughout all of her endeavors in Holly Weird. So that's the main thing. I give her kudos for always staying classy and stuff. So love her for that and her talent.
Her name is?
Kyla Pratt. Kyla Pratt. Oh, my bad. I thought we mentioned her already.
I mentioned her early, but yeah. So,
but
look.
she get all that from her mama, because her mama wrote a song back in the day, and she forgot all about it. I always remind her she wrote a little love song. Been walking around the street, don't know where you're going. Finally, I found you, and your love starts showing. Now you're too late, little boy. I found someone new, but you're too late, little boy. I'm so glad that we are through. So sad that we are one of them. I think she had two endings. But did I hear Kesey? You on here, Kesey? I thought I heard her on there. Okay, but yeah, and she like, oh yeah, she forgot that she wrote that. I'm sitting there watching her write it at the table and stuff. And
first time hearing that, man. Right on. And she has a beautiful voice. A beautiful voice. She's a singer.
Yeah, she had the Jacksons and the Silvers all in her wall, in her room, too. It was like, I got over here and write on magazines and stuff. So.
Lodges. Yeah, I've seen them around. Now, listen. Rahima.
Rahima.
Do you want to ask you something before we leave? Because we're going to have to do a part two and probably a part three.
I'm down.
My schedule right now is pretty tight. And I'm going to fall out on y'all. So
let me ask you.
Go ahead, Ernest.
Is he in the LA Referees Association?
No, I joined the Southwest Union one season years ago, but I just mainly do little AAU stuff, showcases and camps and, you know, little adult leagues and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And
you also do announcing, correct?
Yeah, I announce high school games and announce football or TV. When Pangles has their Pangles All-American camp, which a lot of pros have played in, from like DeMar DeRozan, James Harden.
Long Beach Referees Association, do high
the real stuff. You do the real run also, oh, correct?
Yeah. You also work the real run, the college pro-am. A college summer league used to be a pro-am, but D'Anthony Langston has been running that for years. He stopped for a while, and it was pros when he first started, but he went back to making it be college, but he'll have a pro come playing it every now and then. And that'll be starting up in mid-June and going throughout early August, every Saturday and Sunday. Got the women on Saturday, men on Sunday. So I get to, he let me flex on the mic. I get to do some little PA announcing. I can do the PA announcing and I'll do play-by-play on my own. I'll be cool with my phone.
Another good imitation he does that I love is very unique. He does excellent Chick Hearns.
Oh, yeah.
He does the Chick Hearn, the legendary Chick Hearn, and he got him down pat.
We were spoiled in L.A. having Vin Scully and Chick Hearn, the two of the best.
Yeah, I give Emberg some of that, Dick Emberg some of that, too. Yep.
I was about to bring up, I didn't realize Dick Emberg was doing the Angels. Back in the day on Channel 5. Marino the Duper. Oh, my. Ben Scully. Like, line drive. Base hit. Dodger Blue. Brought to you by Farmer John. And Ross Porter on the radio. Well, come on down the fourth inning with the Dodgers. Sounded like he was loaded. Like he had marbles in his mouth. and of course, and Dad, when we moved to Louisiana, I used to he'd be like, turn the sound down and do Chick Hearn. Watching the game. Now Magic has the ball. Magic yo-yoing up and down on the end of his string, going left to right across your dial on his 47 by 94 Hunker Wood. Now you terminate the dribble. Give it over to Worthy. Worthy's guarded by Scottie Pippen. Face who Worthy gives him. Reagan was a prince, but I both of the trailers. Just, oh, what a beautiful 360 somersault degree slam dunk. Ladies and gentlemen, this basketball game is in the Admiral refrigerator. The doors closed, the lights out, the eggs are cooling, the butter's getting hard, and the jello's jiggling. Or if you say it in the modern version, be like, this basketball game is in the living room. The brew is in the fridge, the joints are getting rolled, and the cocaine is on the table. Because you know how they do it in the NBA. Negroes buy anything. No, I'm just
playing. Oh, man. Hey, man, it's great, man. I definitely, we're going to schedule part two, and we'll probably go to part three and four. So, excellent, man. I'm going to go ahead, and we're going to do our pause. And anybody want to know what's on next week? All you have to do is check the website. I have to, matter of fact, we haven't, before we go, let me just tell you.
And before you start talking about that, next time, I hope Quabinot's back on. You can talk about the pop locking and locking back in the day, because they was doing, getting in shows locking. And then
talk about that right now.
Oh, okay. Okay, because when I met this fool right here, Roscani, I didn't know he had some ticking ability. But then when we was working at Compton High as teachers, he used to clown a little bit, and one of the students' girls used to go off. I said, "Go ahead, hit that pop move. I just want to see her get excited." He's like, "Nah, she man, do it." And he do it right quick. One of the students be busted up off her. You remember that?
Oh, I got it. Hey, man, I'm going to tell you that you talk about it. That's one of the most beautiful things growing up in L.A., man. Just we had so much fun with the dancing and the music. And talk about New York, how they used hip-hop to stop a lot of the gang violence and stuff. I mean, I think it helped in L.A. too, because a lot of the so-called gangbangers and gangbangers also could dance and would do it. It would kind of quell some of that.
That was portrayed in the Michael Jackson movie.
Yes, yes. Yeah, excellent movie, by the way. I mean, I thought it was really good.
I did, yeah. Too.
So, but just all that, with the pop and the ticking, when you brought about Milo, one thing about the Bay Area, too, the Bay Area just had so much creativity, and something about the Bay Area is just so much creativity. But they came down, and we had a group called the Average Black Campbell Lockers, ABC Lockers, in Delamo, and them brothers were so cold. But they did a show at Victoria Park, and Milo had moved up there to the Bay Area with you guys, did what he does. But he came back, and him and his brother Booby, they formed a group, and they had a song called our brother, if he's still on here, mentioned 1977. I think this came out in 77, but Hoochie Coo.
Hoochie Coo. Everybody do it, do the Hoochie Coo.
Yeah, they danced off Hoochie Coo, man. And turned it out. And how they turned it out was that we were just pretty much locking in L.A., but they were ticking and started doing more boogalooing up in the Bay Area. And Milo just came back from the Bay Area and was doing all that stuff. And Booby was doing a robot, and Milo did a robot and took his hat off, put his hat underneath him, and like defecated in the hat and put the hat back on him. And so Booby was doing his robot and punched Milo, and Milo started vibrating and put his hands in the air and just started vibrating. And that turned out Victoria Park that day. That was in 77. I think it was summer 77. No, summer 76. 76.
I think so.
See, so, yeah, I mean, it turned. That was it. That just closed it out. But yeah, that popping up.
That's where I met Rigo.
That's where you met him?
I met Rigo at Victoria Park. One of the night runs up there with Gil and Curdy Moore and them. Okay. We ended up on the same team. He was surprised at my play. He didn't know I was good. I guess I looked like I just looked like I couldn't play.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, Victoria Park was that park. Yes.
Yeah, we had many. Well, I didn't go there that often, but we had some good run. That most definite. But next week it's your buddy's own, Brother Quabina. You got AJ, Tahimba.
Oh, you got, okay, brother AJ. Okay, right on.
Yeah, the topic is Fascism only respects fascists. It's time for a united front. That's the topic. So that's next Wednesday. And then for Conscious Corner, I don't know if Ra have a guest or not.
I ran into
Leroy,
his book, man.
It's Wednesday.
I saw his book earlier. I don't know if you can see this, but
let me make this book. Hold up. I'll make the screen large so we can see it.
Leroy, it's Wednesday. Time to take a bite of you, chocolate boy. 7:30 already. I'm beat.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, man, that's my movie there. Well, Leadership by Brother Ajit Chambi. Man, this is an excellent book. That's a bad brother, man. So next week, I'm glad you're going to have him on there, man. Conscious brother. One of the
Focus.
Ones. I know.
Oh, Focus. There you go.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yes.
So that's our guest for next week.
Okay, right on.
Yep, and that's courtesy Brother Quab, and I got him on our platform. That brother broke down the Wizard of Oz analogy. Oh man, that was beautiful. Anybody that loves great black thought, they really need to check that out. He was on our show maybe 3 weeks ago, something like that. But we're going to do part two coming soon. Matter of fact, yeah, well, we'll schedule it, Brother Pratt. Appreciate you, man. Appreciate everybody for coming this evening. And next time, Rahima, we want you to ask a question or make a comment when you come
okay.
back on.
You got it, Kings. It was a great podcast. I appreciate you guys letting me listen in. I enjoyed it. And much love to you, Patrick.
Oh, wow. You came
much
on
love.
And blessed us with your voice. Thank you, my sister.
All yeah, right. it was good to hear your voice.
Thank
All right.
you. Thank you, Kings. Be well, everybody.
You do the same.
Peace.
So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
Peace.